The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Almost there. It's 90 minutes left to play in the Premier League, and like a footballer's lawyer, we're gagging for it. While Man City and Arsenal tussle for third, at the bottom, your countdown conundrum is 5 divided by 1 equals minus which 2? Meantime, on the way up, it's the Championship playoffs. The Royals take on Swansea after Brendan Rodgers' team proves as damaging to Forest as the Tory government. There's the Europa League final, Porto v Braga. There's Luton AFC Wimbledon in the Blue Square Showdown. And there's sundry other trophies too. All that plus posts, tweets and the world's most relegated footballer in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yeah, hello everybody. Interesting lineup today. We have Sean Ingle.
Hello.
John Ashdown. Nice to see you back, John.
Good to be back.
And not being good enough to lift a Sony's Jacob Steinberg.
I mean, David May.
David May. Ooh.
I actually owe Jacob an apology because it didn't come out quite the way
you
I intended.
You actually do.
Yeah. He's never actually leapfrogged on my back.
No.
And he's contributed far more to
And
Guardian.
Yet that name popped into your mind, Sean.
It did, but because it may... Arguably, was very good for Blackburn.
I don't know if it's an analogy you want to continue with.
Really?
Yeah, I think you just want to say, I'm really sorry, Jake.
Well, I am really sorry. And I was going to...
David May.
No, I was going to actually... The extended riff I was going to go...
Oh.
I was going to talk about Barry and I being a kind of Pallister and Bruce, and Jacob being like kind of a young gun, and May came to mind. Obviously, that's not really a reflection of the man who
was never a young gun.
Right.
Jonathan Wilson said he had me down more as a Jesper Blomqvist.
Right, yeah, that's very much the lines I was thinking of.
But that's not much better. At least, May have, had
Blomqvist played in the Champions League final.
Mm-hmm.
May did sterling work for Blackburn when they won the league in 94-5.
Okay, how far does this analogy go? Who was I in that Man United dream team?
You'd be Beckham, wouldn't you?
Would I? I don't think I would somehow. I don't think I would. That'd be, I don't know who, somebody else. Stadium announcer, says Ben the producer. Anyway, now, big weekend, the last weekend of the Premier League campaign. The big question is relegation. 5 teams, 2 places, 1 point between them. Woof. The fixtures, well, Blackburn, Birmingham and Wolves, who are the teams currently outside the drop, Birmingham only by goal difference, are facing, Birmingham are facing Spurs away. Blackburn are at Wolves, so that'll be a doozy. And then the two teams who are with West Ham in the bottom three, West Ham already down. Wigan are at Stoke and Blackpool are at Man United. That's a big game, Sean Ingle.
It is. It's a big game for Paul Scholes. I was mentioning briefly before we forget, because it could be his last ever game for Manchester United. And obviously, he's been a fantastic player over the years. But it's an even bigger game for Blackpool because they need to win probably to stay up.
Well, they could lose and still stay up. That's the curious thing about this, because it is so fine, the line between success and failure at the bottom. So basically you're saying Scholes will be in there as part of Sir Alex's wacky reserve team lineup.
Yeah, although, he played a weakened side against Schalke, of course, and they won through fairly comfortably. And he also played a weakened side, quite understandably, against Hull 2 years ago, again, before they played Barcelona in the Champions League. And again, they won. So any United side, he feels Berbatov, joint top scorer, they're going to be strong. Scholes, okay, not the player he was, but still a decent decent player. It's going to be, you still got to say United are favourites to win that game, and Blackpool have an awful lot to do to stay up.
No chance of Gary Neville coming out of retirement for this one, is there?
I think he's too busy tweeting. He's up about half. I mean, I'm up about 5 every morning with my daughter, and he's there, suggesting his song of the day and
what tweeting?
Tweeting, yeah.
Busy,
yeah. Gnev too.
He has so much to give, that man. It's always been the way. Interesting stuff from the managers ahead of this game. Fergie wishing that he planted that flag. This the banner that some plucky Man United fans unveiled at Anfield. In the middle of the pre-match sing-song.
I'd thought Fergie would have struggled to get away with it in the same way. He might have been slightly more conspicuous, rolling up at Anfield with a big bag.
Right.
What would Liverpool fans have done, though, if that had happened? If you'd have gone and... No one would have touched it,
I don't think
they?
Anyone would have touched him.
I think...
He bottled it, didn't he, really?
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think he did. But, it's been an interesting season for end of stunts of this nature. Holloway, in the meantime, says that the men from Planet Zarf are out to get him. Yeah, he did. He said the Premier League, I'm not going to do the Bristol accent, will be relieved if we lose and get relegated. Then I won't be badgering them. Those people running the game, what planet are they on? They must have beamed down from the planet Zarf. They are not in the right world. They think we can only beat Manchester United if they are weak. What a load of baloney. But you know what? Is he right? It was so close when they played at Blomfield Road, and had the refereeing been a little bit more accurate, Jacob?
Yeah, I think it's very different, though, going to Old Trafford. If United were to play a strong side, then you'd expect Blackpool to get stuffed 5-0 or something. But if they were to put out people like Obertan and Bebe, possibly, then you would fancy. I mean, they won at Anfield earlier in the season. Mm. But Blackpool can't sit there. If there is a weakened side, they can't sit there and think, oh, it's going to be easy, because they'd have to still remember that these players are playing for Manchester United. There's a reason they're playing for Manchester United. Ferguson obviously thinks that they've got something possibly in the future, and they would be really shooting themselves in the foot if they were to take a laissez-faire attitude to the game.
Hmm. Man United have only dropped 2 points at home all season.
That'll be another thing. They won't want to lose the game, will
they? But you know who those 2 points were dropped to?
West Brom.
West Brom. And I think it was even the Di Matteo West Brom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was 2-0. They were 2-0 up as well in that game.
Van der Sar made probably his only clanger of the season.
Oh, right. Okay. Interesting. If Kuzak plays, you'd fancy Blackpool's chances. Fair to say. P. Daddy, on a different note, any theories as to why Man United's away form in the league has been so comparatively bad? And it has been bad. They're set to record the worst ever, comfortably the worst ever away performance by a Premier League champion. But in the Champions League, they've gone all the way to the final without conceding a single goal away from home.
So, yeah, I mean, away form is always a slightly odd thing that nobody's... I've never read anything that's fully explained why teams struggle so much away from home, or
it's
why
the refereeing,
it can be so different.
I think, is the popular view now.
The refereeing, or the atmosphere, the general comfort of being at home. If we went to record this pod in a warehouse somewhere
in
Houston...
Have you been talking to Greg Ruffley and his cup of tea thing? All right. You know where the kettle is where you're at home, and you can make yourself a brew. I got a bit lost after that, but that was the gist.
It's a strange one. Although they have only lost 4 times away from home. They've drawn 10 of them. So it's not like they're getting hammered away from home or anything.
And it's interesting, though, I think I made this point before, but United's treble-winning side in 1999, which, you know, we look back on now as being the great Fergie side, they didn't beat a team ranked second to eighth away from home in that season.
All right.
It's the same this year, of course. And they've only scored, 2 goals, I think, at the top six.
So it's just not an issue, basically.
Well, no, it is, obviously. I mean, you want to it's something that...
But why in Europe is it different, do you think?
Well, they set up slightly different than Europe, don't they? They tend to be a little bit more defensive and sort of counter-attack
a bit.
So
in Europe, you're able to go for the away goal, and now teams are so scared of it. When they play at home, they're sometimes a bit more reticent to come out, and United can come forward. They beat Chelsea and Schalke, playing really well.
Hmm.
I wonder if United's sort of status still holds a bit more weight in Europe, whereas Premier League teams are prepared to have a go when United visit their grounds, and perhaps a few teams on the continent are still a little bit, oh, it's Manchester United.
Mm. Well, one of those teams was Chelsea that they beat.
So. Yeah.
Fair point. Well, the other games in the relegation battle, then Birmingham are at Spurs. Interesting approach they've taken to their big end of season game, Birmingham, and one can only imagine what the conversation must be like over Colin Doyle's breakfast table after his wife basically grassed him up. He went out with Ben Foster. It was Doyle's wife, not Foster's, I think. Is
Becky
that right?
Doyle, yeah.
Yeah. So the two keepers go out, basically.
No, it was an end of season do, and I think 8 senior players stayed out late after the do till 4 a.m.
Right, and she got rather upset that he came back in at 4 a.m.
With Fozzy? Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. For a bit of unscheduled... Lord knows what. Anyway, so she tweets that and says, have some respect.
Yeah, celebrate next week when you're safe.
When you're safe, she said, not if you're safe.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Yeah. You have to. She's right, isn't she?
She is, although I don't think she's on Twitter anymore. I was trying to find her earlier.
A lot of people going off Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's an extraordinary approach from a professional footballer to go out on the lash just for a big game.
But Alex McLeish was talking yesterday and said that actually you can't punish them because the rule is that you can't drink 48 hours before a game.
Right.
And they were drinking 6 days before a game.
Right. So, I would like to know what it was that Birmingham were doing in an awards dinner that took till 4 a.m. because you'd think it'd be a pretty brief affair, Carling Cup notwithstanding.
But these things, they spill over, you know, you're chatting. Yeah. They do, Jimbo.
Right, okay. I mean, we'll have our own awards.
Take it from me.
Yeah. You've been to awards things, Sean. What are they like? Anyway, Mikey Mike 2711 says, rather than who you think will go down, who do you want to go down and why? The games, well, we mentioned Birmingham at Spurs, but Wolves are taking on Blackburn. That's a huge game. Wigan are at Stoke, West Ham, I'm then no longer part of the picture, Jacob. Sorry, but who do you want to go down with West Ham? Who do you want to come?
I would like Birmingham to go down.
Why, Jacob?
Just because they, just out of pure spite, they knocked us out of the Carling Cup semi-final. Right. So that's getting my own back in my way.
All right.
But I don't really know, actually. I mean, I want Blackpool to stay up because they're such great fun. And Holloway is amusing and they play really great football. Every game I've watched them play is really, really enjoyable.
Mm.
And Wolves as well. They're an entertaining side. So I suppose we're looking at Wigan.
Looks like Wigan and Birmingham. Wigan and Birmingham.
In terms of want, both for financial and also aesthetically pleasing reasons, I think it would be Birmingham and Blackburn.
John Ashton.
Well, I'm pretty sick of Wigan. I don't think.
Why?
Well, just because you see their name on a fixture, and it just seems to kill it. I can't remember an interesting game apart from last weekend that Wigan have been in, which sounds very harsh, but I think it's about time.
Wigan West Ham last weekend.
Yeah, as I said, apart from last weekend.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it's about time that they bow out of the Premier League now. Although I do like Roberto Martinez. I think he's a nice guy. And yeah, either one of Blackburn and Birmingham. Probably Blackburn because it's slightly more interesting if they.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Well, a lot of people wondering. Wigan fan are going to be so annoyed with you.
Well, that's the thing. If there are Wigan fans who listen to the podcast, we do these fan verdicts in the Observer on Sundays. And it's always a nightmare trying to find a Wigan fan who is going to a Wigan match to give us their verdict on the game. It's an absolute. There just don't seem to be any. So if there are any Wigan fans listening, then I would love to hear from you.
Right. I'm sure you will. Yeah. West Ham, of course, the big question now is who's going to be in charge for their game against Sunderland?
Oh, Kevin Keane is going to be in
charge.
Is he? Yeah.
And then thereafter? Who would you like, Jacob?
Who would I like? I don't know. There's so many names they've been linked with.
Well, Chris Hughton seems the most likely candidate at the moment.
Yeah, I do rate Hughton, but I think what you have to look at as well with him is that he had a really good side in the Championship with Newcastle. Mm. You know, he had the likes of Barton, Carroll, Colaccini, Gutierrez. Two of those guys played in the World Cup for Argentina. He's not going to have a team like that at West Ham.
Could so have some English World Cup players.
He won't have.
Oh, okay.
No, they'll all be off.
Who will stay then, do you think, of the big names? Any?
I would hope that Demba Ba would stay.
Really?
Yeah. He only signed in January, so there's a possibility he could, although he was involved in the fracas on Monday night at Grosvenor House.
As you said before, Jim, I think West Ham have more leaks than a Welsh gardener. And I think what's interesting, what's come out of the club, is that their first choice, they had a sort of a top tier, which was McLaren and O'Neill. Then they've got a sort of middle tier beneath that, which includes Houghton, it includes Dave Jones, it includes several others.
Dave Jones, is he?
Yeah, okay. which is an interesting one.
Mm.
I think Warnock is unlikely, even though he's had a turbulent sort of time at QPR, because it is definitely frying pan to fire. And you've got to look at that. Would you really want to go in and work under Sullivan and Gold and Brady, given you know what's happened this season.
This is the problem. I mean, you look at yesterday. We had the report on Grant saying that six managers were offered my job during the season. And why would you want to go and work under these clowns?
Presumably, they all turned it down.
Yeah, well, the one who is very obvious. I don't know how many the others were, but the one that's very obvious is O'Neill,
right?
Who they just completely screwed up trying to get. And you know, Karen Brady played a very interesting role in all that, so as did Sullivan.
Interesting how, Jacob?
I don't want to go too much into it, but you know, they're trying to force O'Neill's hand with the
going public.
Yeah, by going public was just disastrous.
Right. Okay. I think a lot of managers would go there because they get paid a lot of money to do it.
I think the smart appointment would be somebody like Malky Mackay from Watford, or just an up and coming manager who's going to be there for a few years and will have time to stabilise things. But you've got no faith in
reading the message boards. Fans are not at all confident about who they're going to get in. You look last year after they sacked Zola, they published a 10-point plan and they said the most important thing we do is appoint the right man, and they pointed Avram Grant. And what was interesting this week was that they said they wanted to get a British manager. Since Egil Olsen took Wimbledon down in 2000, only one foreign manager out of 31 has taken a side down, and that is Avram Grant
twice.
And that's the man they picked.
It's an increasing bugbear of mine, actually, that clubs are obsessed with Well, because they said they wanted somebody with a knowledge of the East End as well. Like, they might have to drive the team bus or something back from away games. And teams do seem to be obsessed with getting ex-players in or people who are from the area, as if that just by geographical quirk means that they'll therefore be a good manager for that club. It winds me up, and it's something that Sheffield United seem to be slightly obsessed with as well in their search for a new manager. Mark Robbins seems to be at the top of the list, largely because he's done half-decent jobs at Rotherham and Barnsley, which, you know, put him to the sort of fore of the board's thinking. And actually, if you spread your net further afield, you've obviously got a bigger list of good names to choose from.
How far afield would you go? Would you go to sort of East Midlands? Would you make that?
Yeah. Lincolnshire even, yeah. Let's go that far. Maybe the coast.
Woof, John. All right, well, that's where we'll end part one. So much still to come on this, the final Football Weekly Extra, I'm told, of this season. Part two, the final part two of Wiggly Extra this season, starts off briefly with the race for third. Man City in devastating form against Stoke. Carlos was really exceptional. You saw the goals, I imagine. Yeah. Woof, what a free kick.
Yeah, possibly the best free kick since Alano's against Newcastle in 2007. There's been a lot of debate, I think, between City fans, which was better.
Mm.
It was for Alano's.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it just refresh our memories vis-a-vis the...
The Alano. Yeah. I think he was about 35 yards out. Mm. This was just after he signed as well.
Oh, yeah.
And, he looked like a fantastic signing. And then he rockets it into the top corner with his right foot.
All right. Where is he now, Alano?
I think he's at Galatasaray.
Is he?
Turkey, yeah.
Yeah, Turkey. It's, well, you know, it's basically a kind of... When you're doing the knowledge, John, and people write in saying, where is so-and-so now? That's probably the first place you look, isn't it? Turkey. It's like that cupboard we've all got at home where things end up.
But he's still, you know, he would, you know, until he got injured at the World Cup, he was a starting, you know, player for Brazil. I think he'll be a starting player in the Copa.
Do you think he'll start in the Copa America?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Interesting. Now, we mentioned, anyway, the race for that win for City moved them into third place now. Into the Champions League through the front door, and Arsenal dropping down to fourth. Of course, it's all to be decided on the final day because there's just one point between them. Man City are at Bolton, who haven't won a game in four, although they did have that victory over Arsenal, if that counts. Arsenal, meanwhile, are at Fulham. Are they going to win that game?
Who, Fulham or Arsenal?
Arsenal?
Not on this corner.
They have a good record at Craven Cottage.
And Fulham did just... Well, I know they beat Birmingham, but they also got stuffed by Liverpool at home.
That is true.
So...
Fulham, of course, are on course for a Europa League place next year. We were discussing this in the pod on Monday.
Great game for Arsenal, then. No one tackling them.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, although Barry's contention was that Fulham are actively pursuing yellow cards so as to have a worse disciplinary record than Blackpool for the very purposes of avoiding a Europe second club competition.
So a team that got to the final last year now wants to avoid that competition.
That's the Denninger theory.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've heard stranger things. Portlander says, any thoughts from Podsters on Fulham's progress under Hughes after being lauded under Woy? It could have been a tough one for Mark Hughes to walk into, but he's ending up with a higher league position than Hodgson. Kudos due.
Well, a higher league position compared to last season. I think the season before, Hodgson finished seventh. I think he's done well and slightly better than I expected.
Given the injuries.
Given the injuries, particularly to Zamora. What will be interesting, though, over the next season or so is, I mean, I think Fulham are an ageing side. And I think, you know, whether he'll have the money to bring in a bit of fresh young blood will be important.
Mm. He's a great manager at that level, though. And he makes some really good signings for Blackburn and for Fulham.
Yeah.
He lost the plot at City when he bought people like Adebayor and Lescott for big money. But then if you look at someone like David Bentley, Benny McCarthy, Roque Santa Cruz, who he bought really cheap for Blackburn, that is, he's really got an eye for a bargain there.
All right, excellent. Liverpool, meanwhile, and Spurs jostling for that final Europa League place, and that'll be very exciting. Now... we've talked about the relegation battle. Now let's look forward to the big game coming up at the end of the month at Wembley, the richest match in world football. What do you think, Sean? The playoff final I'm talking about, of course. Oof. Oof. £40 million. Or something like that. For the winner, it is Reading against Swansea. And how about the playoff semi-final, second legs this week? They were terrific, weren't they? Jacob, we were talking about this before. You were drooling over the Swansea Nottingham Forest game. Britain's Got Talent, and so the rest of it. The biggest Swan success since Marcel Proust.
Yeah, there was a goal from the halfway line, which was really, really good, after Lee Camp went up.
Yeah, I mean, it was an empty goal he was aiming at.
But he was being chased by someone, and he was still near the right touchline as well. So it was really good technique.
Right.
It was an exciting game, anyway. So come on.
Yeah, no, it was a terrific game anyway, and Swansea heading into this final very, very fired up from that match. I think Reading, though, a lot of people see them as the form team. Is that fair?
They're both the form teams, really. I mean, that's why it's such a great game to look forward to, because they're both playing really, really well. And they haven't got the sort of baggage, I don't think, that Forest and Cardiff both had. Forest didn't really convince all season, and so it was no surprise, really, that they got beaten by Swansea, and Cardiff just chokers. I mean, it's they're really, really bad for it. Reading's
that's not, he's not chuckling. If you heard a chuckle in John's voice there, he wasn't smiling.
No, there's no other word for it, really. Right. I mean, it happens to them, it seems to happen to them every single year.
Reversing the question from part one, who would you like to see of Swansea and Reading back in the Premier League? Or in the
to win?
Yeah,
I think Reading have been there. We've seen them. I quite like Swansea in there. They've, you know, built it organically and slowly and steadily. They play nice football. Brendan Rodgers has done a great job since going there. Yeah, I think they'd go up and they'd give it a good go as well.
All right. In the other playoffs, Huddersfield knocked out Bournemouth after a penalty shootout thriller. Did you see that, John?
Yeah, it was superb. I had it on my dual screens with the Europa League.
Wow, okay, cool.
We've got good tellies where you can get two different matches on at the same time. Yeah.
That was that can't have been a tough choice, really, between that and the Europa League.
Yeah, I was drawn to the Galfarm Stadium rather than the Aviva Stadium. Yeah, it swung this way, and that ended up 3-3 at the end of extra time. It could have been sort of 5-5, and the Huddersfield players held their nerve from the spot. 39-year-old Ian Bennett was in goal for Huddersfield.
Ooh.
And he saved one with his legs, another one hit the bar. Although you feel sorry for Bournemouth, because, you know, it would be great for a team like that to get into the Championship, Huddersfield did. I mean, they were so clearly the third best team in that league, it would seem harsh for them not to at least get to the final.
Yeah, and they're going to be facing either Peterborough or MK Dons. Speaking of MK Dons, AFC Wimbledon taking on Luton. Sean, this is a huge game. In the Blue Square, that's at Old Trafford, is it? Oh, is it Eastlands, right?
No, it is a huge game. I mean, it takes me back. I remember seeing Wimbledon take on Luton in the FA Cup.
Right.
Semi-final back in 88. I remember driving round. Well, I wasn't driving at the time. I was only a nipper, but my brother being car sick pretty much the whole journey. And we travelled down with our uncle, who I don't think had ever seen anything like it. I mean, it was just wave after wave of vomiting, and the car stank afterwards. But anyway, it wasn't a classic game, but Wimbledon, I think, deservedly won.
Right.
And after that little that tangent, yeah. It's an interesting one, because I think FC Wimbledon won 8 of their last 9. They were very impressive in the semi-final against Fleetwood. Luton, though, this season won 3-0 over AFC Wimbledon at Kenilworth Road. They drew 0-0 away, so, you know, head-to-head, they've got a slightly better record. It would be, you know, despite coming from Luton, it would be, you know, if Luton don't go up, it would be lovely to see FC Wimbledon do it, because I think it's a wonderful story to go from basically the bottom tier to the verge of the Football League in 9 seasons. I think
how many
really
levels have they
club.
Gone up now?
God, I'm trying to. Is it 6?
5 or 6?
5 or 6,
isn't it? Yeah.
Right.
They're a lovely club. You know, you go down there, there's a really nice atmosphere, and lots of the guys. Used to be on the Wimbledon supporters club. They were the ones that pushed AFC Wimbledon. They're still there. They, you know, they chat to ordinary fans, and it's a really nice family club. So good luck to them.
Excellent, Sean. In the meantime, the aforementioned Europa League final, which didn't quite catch fire the way that people were hoping.
No, I mean, Braga tried to Red Star Belgrade their way to the title. Stuck a lot of men behind the ball.
Ah, thanks. Yeah.
We're talking back, you know, to the 1990 European Cup final. Porto scored just before half time. Falcao with a lovely kind of hang time header, and then really the only chance Braga got was when their substitute Marosso, broke free just after break and shot against Porto keeper's legs. But I think I'm right in saying Porto only had one shot on target themselves.
Falcao was the only.
Yeah, so it was a really drab game, unfortunately.
All right. Yeah, especially, you know, with all the build up from from Porto. They're on for the quadruple this season if they win the Portuguese Cup next week.
It's such a shame in a way, because we were talking about this quite a lot last night, that clearly Porto are such a good team at the moment, and for them to, you know, they'll be losing all their people will go. I mean, it just seems to be impossible for teams from Portugal to hold on to these guys.
Villas-Boas was making the point, though, that Hulk has a 100 million euro buyout clause, Falcao has 30 million euros. So you never know. I'd love to see them stay and have a real go. Speaking of having a real go, I was so disappointed with Braga last night. It kind of followed on from Stoke in the FA Cup, and you just wish teams went for a bit more. You know, you think back to Alaves against Liverpool 10 years ago, that great 5-4 game, and you just wish teams just went for it.
Absolutely, Sean. That's it for part two, you know. They're whizzing by, aren't they? Just one more part of Wheelie Extra to go now, and it's all about debts and some other bits and stuff. Woof. That's coming up after this.
How many woofs is that, Jimbo?
Probably too many.
Are you trying to sort of set some...
I don't know, some...
woofing record?
Probably.
Check the old Asian markets. There's the woof spread.
Yeah. David Conn. He's been at it again, hasn't he? He's been at it again. He's published the Premier League's debt. Ooh, it's a lot of money. Now, this... some people would find quite dull talking about money in football, but it was quite stunning that collectively they lost close to £500 million last year, despite the fact that they'd made a record amount of money as well. And this has to be seen, you know, in perspective of the fact that clubs are going to be permitted to record losses of only £45 million altogether over the next three seasons. So basically, in one season, they've lost 10 times what the new restrictions will allow them to lose over three. Yikes! There's going to be some sudden changes in the way football clubs are run. Is that right, Sean?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what Platini, how Platini responds to this. I mean, the other things he pointed out, 16 of the 20 clubs recorded losses, and a couple of those, I think West Ham, things have got murky there. Birmingham, things have certainly got murky. And Arsenal would have made a loss if it hadn't been for Highbury property sales. So, football isn't... in a great way financially, despite all the money sloshing into the game.
No, but it hasn't been for ages. I think the difference is now is that the UEFA restrictions mean that someone's actually going to bring them to account for it.
Absolutely. I mean, the key question, of course, is how fierce the UEFA implement these restrictions. And, you know, they talk the talk, but can they walk the walk?
Well, they do seem quite cut and dry, the restrictions. But there are 3 years to get themselves sorted out, I suppose. Interesting, isn't it?
Isn't the Premier League exciting this year as well? Talking of money with... the top three richest clubs in the top three positions. That's really fun. Well done. Well done, everybody.
As far as I understand it, I might be wrong, but as far as I understand, I've done a lot of looking into the UEFA licence this week for the knowledge. And you get your UEFA licence from your host country's FA, and all these financial fair play rules are put into the license. So if you financially aren't within the rules, you don't get a UEFA license, therefore you can't play in Europe. But it seems to me that it's the FAs that decide if you meet the criteria or not. So it's not necessarily going to be UEFA that's enforcing it. It's going to be the home country's FAs that are enforcing
these
rules.
Was that the case with Portsmouth then last season, if they qualified for by the FA Cup?
Yeah, they didn't initially apply for license. They weren't financially.
You were looking into this on account of that person asking if Liverpool or Spurs do actually have to take their place in the Europa League this season.
Yeah, that's right.
And the answer is yes.
Well, yes, they do now they've got a license. But if they didn't want to, they could have just not applied for a license.
Right. Would there have been repercussions if they hadn't applied for a license?
No, it's fine. You don't have to.
All right then. John, also featuring in the knowledge this week, was a footballer called Darlington Omodiagbe. Why, John?
Because he's now been relegated five times on the bounce.
With different clubs?
Five different teams, yeah. All in Germany. Sorry?
The new Neil Redfern.
Absolutely. I don't think Neil Redfern ever managed more than a couple on the bounce. They were sort of split up. But Darlington's managed it five times in a row. This last time... his team, Wacker Berghausen, lost 4-3, I think, on the final day of the season to be relegated from the Bundesliga's third tier.
Right.
So his career's not exactly going well. He's the sort of player you don't want to see turning up for pre-season training, isn't he? If you're a fan of that club and you notice you've signed him, it's probably bad news.
Wow, that's one to follow on the transfer market. Or sign him and loan him somewhere.
to your rivals in the...
I'm surprised he hasn't changed his passport by
now. Season tickets immediately sent back as soon as he turns up.
Nebel posting in saying, Fenerbahçe, photo finish in Turkey this weekend. Fener are 16 wins and one draw in the last 17 league matches. It's going to be exciting, isn't it?
Woof.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sean. Toon Toon wants to institute some end-of-season awards. That'll fill up some time in Monday's pod. He's got some suggestions. Most underrated player of the year, for example, he suggests Kevin Nolan. Best value signing of the year, he nominates Odin Wingy, who cost a bit of money, actually. There must be some cheaper fellows than that. I think that Hernandez, for example, was cheaper than Odin Wingy.
Odin Wingy was 1 million, I think.
Was he? Was he only 1 million?
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought he was their record signing, but I might be wrong about that. Most improved player of the year, Nani, says Toon Toon. And greatest WTF moment of the year, Carroll to Liverpool for the eighth biggest transfer ever, etc., etc., etc. Lots of other people posting in with similars. We'll collate these and come back with some sort of responses and some of our own. Of course, The Guardian is currently running its own excellent series or strand of player, etc., manager, pundit even, of the year. There you go.
Are you in that, Jimbo?
I don't know. Am I in? I wouldn't know. Am I? Oh, Ben's nodding. Is there a football? I haven't read it. I genuinely haven't read it. I have not.
You could just be clicking yourself loads and loads of times on the poll.
Recommend.
No, but I know my afternoon's going to be spent, though. Samir Sagu wants to ask our nominations for worst player of the year and worst guest on the pod for the year. Worst guest, that's Jacob Steinberg, isn't it? He's only been in a couple of times. He's always disappointed. Worst player of the year. Hey, producer Ben's weighed in with one.
Go on.
Joe Cole.
Yeah, he'd be up there.
Joe Cole, who Stephen Gerrard at the start of the season said was better than Messi.
Yeah.
And could quite possibly have been player of the year.
Right.
Yeah. So Gerrard's... I'm looking forward to his management career.
Well, have you got a worst player of the year?
Worst player of the year.
You got anything to match Joe Cole?
One of the worst signings of the year has been Mauro Boselli at Wigan, who I think they broke their transfer record for him last summer, and he's now back in Argentina, isn't he, I think?
Mm. All right. Shirts, the Woolsey Mammoth says, is it too early to talk about next year's fashionable offerings from our favourite football clubs? He posts a link to the Barcelona, the controversial Qatar Foundation Barcelona. When have you seen it? It's a bit funny, isn't it? How do you feel about that, Sean? Yeah, me too. And, other people, Nicholas D's got the new Olympic Marseille kit, which he says has an old school charm. I'm not that excited about that. The Milan kit as well, that leaves me a little bit cold. Have you seen that? New Milan kit, they've got white collar and cuffs, basically.
It's not very traditional Milan.
Well, they have done that before. I remember seeing Van Basten trotting around in something similar. It's got thin stripes as well, which is, again, a bit of a hark back to the Glory Sacchi era, as I recall. But anyway, you know, interesting.
Arsenal have got a new badge for next season as well, I think I've seen, with these weird wreaths around it. Don't like that either.
Is that really? Is that to commemorate every season that they haven't actually won a trophy?
Producer Ben reckons it's an anniversary. He was suggesting 150, but we're a bit doubtful about that. 125 sounds more realistic. Happy birthday anyway, whichever one it is. There you go. A couple of things before we sign off today. First of all, John, how about that? Was it Man United, Sheffield United Youth Cup?
Yeah, the Youth Cup final first leg at Bramall Lane.
There's another leg to come.
Yes, it's a two-legged affair. One's at Bramall Lane, one's at Old Trafford. And there was 29,977 tickets sold. I don't think there was quite that many there. There was a few more empty seats than that. But there must have been at least 27,000 fans there.
All right. What age group is this?
These are under-18s.
Okay.
Great game. Finished 2-2. A lot of potential on display. Paul Pogba and Ravel Morrison looked very good.
A lot of talk about Pogba.
Pogba looked like a proper player. I think he might be something quite special. And Jordan Slew, who scored Sheffield United's second equaliser, didn't look out of place at all either. So, it was an interesting game. And who knows, at Old Trafford, maybe we'll spring a surprise.
Maybe. Meantime, women's FA Cup final. Arsenal, they're playing Rummagers. Bristol City Academy. Boy, me, the sub-editor's going to have fun with that. The women's football, Bristol City. I'm only saying.
ESPN didn't come to you then to do the presenting.
No, they didn't, actually. They didn't. And I'd have been too busy watching the final of the Italian season this weekend. You know, moving down the hierarchy of global football. There's the race for fourth place. That's it. We know who's going down. And we talked about Sampdoria, but the race for fourth place. You might see Udinese going in, and this touches on this whole thing of Alexis Sanchez. Where's he going to go? And Man City apparently had an offer turned down by Udinese. Ha! Have that. A lot of talk in Italy that he'll be going to Inter. Of course, the big transfer story there is the fact that Pirlo, who has become such a fixture at the San Siro, is joining Juventus. It's not official yet, but he has, you know, officially said that he's moving on after to 10 years, making him only the ninth player to play for all of the big three Italian sides, because he was at Inter and then they sent him to Milan, little knowing what they were unleashing.
Would you make a Pirlo now? Because obviously he's been a fantastic player over years, but never been the quickest, but it doesn't perhaps suit Milan's style now.
That's the explanation is that in the old days they would play with the midfielders and then behind the regista to distribute the balls from deep, and now with Allegri it's the midfielders with a fantasista doing the same job up front, which is where Pirlo used to play before. Well, first Mazzoni at Brescia and then Ancelotti at Milan moved him back. But, yeah, as you say, with the pace that he doesn't have, you can understand why the club are thinking, yes?
Do you know who the other eight are, if he's the ninth?
Well, there are a lot of very old names on there, but more recently, Christian Vieri, who went through eight seasons with a different club every season, played for all three, and so did Roberto Baggio. And so did Vieira, Patrick Vieira, and probably loads of others. Nine of them, anyway.
It's interesting, isn't it, how in Italy players seem to be able to move between those big three. It doesn't seem to happen in England.
Yeah, that is interesting. Inzaghi signed on for another season. Huzzah, Pippo! He's 37, you know, 37. Says Max Allegri, the manager, he'll still win you games when he's 54.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah,
Stanley Matthews could do it till the age of 15.
There's an interesting next season. Kevin Poole at Burton Albion has signed on for another year, and he'll be 48 when the season kicks off.
Woof. Oh dear, I've done it again. but that's extraordinary. Milan is shaping up. There's already some signings going on there, actually, because they already had the toughest defence in Serie A this year, so they've quietly toughened up at the back. And the two signings already announced are Philippe Mexès. And
I'm always convinced by him.
I think he's a very talented defender, but his head's a bit of a ticking time bomb, no?
What are people saying?
That haircut's a bit of a warning sign, you know? I think that you can tell a lot of a man from his haircut. Taiwo as well. I'm not that familiar with Marseille's football, but Taiwo, I'm even not.
What about Zlatan?
Will he stay?
Yeah. Not City.
I don't think he's going to go to City, but I might be wrong about that. I might be wrong. Sorry,
no. I was going to ask about that, but I was also going to ask about if Ibrahimovic did go, would Tevez? What were people saying about Tevez? Because he's been linked with Inter and Milan.
Yeah, well, he's been linked principally in Italy with Inter, and Inter and Real Madrid are seen as the likely destinations. Inter because they've already got about 64 Argentines, and he had a lot of contact with them because he was going to when he was injured. His physio, bizarrely, was operating out of the same hotel that they use for their ritiri. So he was basically hanging out in the same hotel where all the Inter players were, which seems as a bit of a strange one, that. Juventus, in the meantime, are busy making noises about getting a large discount from Atletico Madrid for Kun Agüero, which would be a major signing for an old lady.
I saw Gian Balaga saying that only Madrid we're going in for him at the moment. I'm
right.
willing to pay.
Well, Atletico Madrid, apparently they want to reduce his buyout clause just so that he doesn't go to Real. That was the story in today's Gazette. I don't know if there's any truth in it, but what does seem likely is that Antonio Conte is going to be taking over as their whatever manager, 10th manager in the last 7 years or something, which would be interesting, with Pirlo suddenly popping up there just behind whichever beefy chaps they have in the midfield. That's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back to report on the big finale in the Premier League and all the other weekend's activities on Monday. There will be a special European paper review up on Friday morning, if you fancy that. In the meantime, though, it's many thanks to producer Ben, to Sean Ingle, to Jacob Steinberg, and to John Ashdown. Thanks, fellows. And you, listeners, have a lovely weekend. See you Monday.
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.